This podcast is part of the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Jeff in Sachse, Texas. And just like Bob, I'm a tactical guy and I like a tactical podcast.
Jeff, wait a minute. That's practical guy and practical podcast.
Oh, never mind.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 404 of your weekly Handgun World podcast. This is a practical show done by a very practical, everyday, non-law enforcement, non-military guy, and that is me. This week, I got a nice interview for you. I'm excited about this one. I'm excited for you to hear it. My guest this week is Grant Cunningham, a revolver expert, an author on revolvers, and we're going to specifically talk about the Kimber K6 revolver. I just got done completing the interview, and I'm going to play that for you here in just a few minutes. I want to make a correction from last week's episode, I was talking about silencers and suppressors, and I called them suppressors, and I like to use the word suppressor, but I have to say, I have to correct myself, the inventor called it a silencer. The inventor called it a silencer. I believe his name was, hopefully I can pronounce this right, Hiram Maxim, and it was called the Maxim Silencer. Anyway, my point from last week, so there, I corrected myself. My point from last week was I would rather that we call them suppressors because silencers kind of gives the anti-gunners reason to go after us on these types of things. It's kind of like assault rifles. You know, people like to call AR-15s assault rifles. And I don't think that they, my personal opinion, I don't think they're really assault rifles. But the anti-gunners, the people that don't like guns, the people that don't want us to have guns, they like to use any kind of terminology that make things sound evil. And Hollywood is mainly responsible for silencers sounding like an evil thing to own. So words mean things. The messaging means things and words mean things. And so I just prefer to call them suppressors. They're really nothing more than a muffler. They don't completely, in most guns, now I'm going to say in most, not all, but in most guns, they don't completely get rid of all of the noise. And I would venture to guess that people are still going to know that it's a gun being fired, especially if they're in close proximity to the firearm. They're going to know that it's a gun being fired. So anyway, I wanted to put that correction out there from my episode last week because I got a lot of emails about it. Thank you all for the emails that you sent me. And most of you send me emails and voicemails for a lot of reasons, and I appreciate them. I want all of you who listen to know I listen to every single voicemail and I read every email that you send in. They don't all make the show, but I do read them, I do listen, and most of the time I try to give you a response of some kind. So, let's get into the interview with Grant Cunningham about revolvers and specifically the Kimber K6 revolver. Well, my special guest for this episode, back on this show for the second time, Grant Cunningham. How you doing, Grant?
Well, I'm great, Bob. How are you doing?
Well, I'm kind of what they say, living the dream, but only doing it one day at a time.
Okay, I like that. I'll use that.
Hey, there you go. Living the dream, but only one day at a time.
Yeah, I like it. That's good.
Well, you know, for my listeners' benefit, you are an author. You're definitely a well-accomplished author, a well-accomplished trainer. You love revolvers. You're a big revolver fan, aren't you?
Yeah. In fact, let's see. I've written three books about revolvers now. So, yeah, I guess I'm kind of a fan of the things.
And that's why I wanted to do this episode, because I don't talk much about revolvers. That's probably my mistake. I only own one revolver. And, you know, there seems to be a resurgence in revolvers. Do you see that?
You know, interestingly enough, I'm kind of starting to see that happening, and we're starting to see more new revolvers come to the market. Of course, with Kimber's revolver, and of course now Colt is back in the revolver market. We're seeing more models from the established companies, Smith & Wesson, of course. We're starting to see more models coming out from them. And if my classes are any indication, I'm seeing an increase in interest in the revolver classes that I teach, because I teach some revolver-only classes. So, yeah, I think we're starting to see a little bit of a revival, I think. I'm not sure exactly why, but I think I definitely think it's out there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you why, but it seems to me that perhaps maybe the diminished popularity of revolvers never really went away.
Well, I think that may be true. I think there was always sort of a core group of people who were always going to buy revolvers. Back in the 70s, the majority of handguns sold were revolvers, and then that sort of started to turn around, particularly after police departments adopted auto-loading pistols in great numbers. And in the later part of the 70s, especially in the 80s, that really turned around. And today, about a third of the market, roughly, in terms of handgun sales are revolvers, right around somewhere between 30 and 34%, something like that, the last time I looked. And so, the group of people who were buying revolvers never really went away, but I think that as we get more and more non-typical shooters into the market, and we've seen a big increase in people coming into the shooting world who weren't really part of the shooting world. They weren't really hobbyists. And for them, the revolver, I think, probably looks like maybe a less intimidating alternative. Maybe that's why.
Now, that's an interesting observation. Yeah. For some of the newer people, maybe it is less intimidating than a semi-auto pistol.
Yeah, and because they're not hobbyists, they weren't really involved in the thing about competition shooting or picking the same thing the police had or anything. They're just picking something that maybe they want to pick up and actually shoot. And that I see a lot of newer shooters today, and picking up revolvers, I see a lot of newer shooters in my revolver only classes. And although, interestingly enough, although I'm kind of known as the revolver guy, I don't always suggest a revolver as somebody's first gun. But I'm seeing a lot of people choose it for themselves without any pressure being put one way or the other on them.
So that brings up a question. I have some other questions I want to ask you, but you said that Sure. you don't necessarily recommend it for someone's first gun. Why?
No, I don't. I've said this before. The revolver is the easiest gun in the world to shoot, but it's one of the hardest guns in the world to shoot well. And for it, mastering that double action trigger is really frustrating for a lot of folks, especially a lot of new shooters, and especially those shooters who aren't getting really good instruction, because there just aren't a lot of people out there who really understand how to manipulate a double action trigger properly. And so it does take them more time and more effort to learn to shoot well than perhaps something like a striker fired polymer pistol. So if somebody comes to me and says, "Hey, I'm relatively new to shooting. I'm not going to become an enthusiast, but I do want a gun that I can carry. I do want a gun that I can defend my home with. And I'm at least willing to put in the effort to learn how it works, right? And how to handle it properly," I'll usually suggest an auto-loading pistol. because it is they're easier to shoot.
Yeah.
If somebody says, yeah, I'm willing to put in the time and effort to really learn how to shoot it well, and I really want to spend the time on the range and the simplicity of the manual of arms appeals to me, then I might suggest a revolver.
Interesting. So for those people that do want to put in that time and you suggest a revolver, so for those people, why are they still a good choice for concealed carry? Why a revolver still?
Well, the interesting thing about a revolver is that it's a very, very easy gun to carry. And what I mean by that is a lot of people will talk about the revolver as being thick because of that cylinder, right? And they'll talk about how wide the cylinder is and how hard it is to hide something that wide without looking sort of at the whole package. And the thing about the revolver is that the revolver is a much, in most cases, a much rounder gun. And I mean that not just in terms of the cylinder, but also in terms of the overall shape. For instance, the grip frame on a revolver where you're going to grasp the gun, you're going to have your hands, is generally kind of a nice big round arc on a revolver, where on any autoloading pistol, it's, you know, a 90 degree angle that's pointing up and printing through things.
Pretty close.
And exactly. And I tell people it's kind of like you've got your dress shirt on and you go to your kid's toy box and you pull out a couple of Legos and you drop them into the breast pocket and look at yourself in the mirror and you can tell they're Legos.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Good analogy.
Now go take a couple of marbles and drop them into the pocket and you'll notice that they're not as noticeable, you know, because those round contours tend to hide a little better. So it's an easy gun to hide. It's a very easy gun to draw because, again, because of those rounded contours, it tends to draw very easily, particularly if you don't have a hammer spur catching on something. So they're very resistant to neglect. They're not as resistant to abuse as, say, an autoloading pistol, but they're very resistant to neglect. So you can leave them be for years on end and pick them up and they still shoot. So they're very tolerant to neglect. In a lot of cases, because there are a lot of very, very lightweight revolvers that somebody picks at, they can be very lightweight. Nothing carries, as far as I'm concerned, in a pocket holster as well as a lightweight revolver. Again, the autos just kind of tend to poke. The revolvers tend to disappear. So there are a lot of reasons to pick one for concealed carry.
I was just going to say that. I have several guns that I pocket carry whenever I do pocket carry, which is not very often. And you're right. You're right. My Smith & Wesson 642 seems to carry the best in a pocket.
Yeah, and it comes out of the pocket so easily.
Comes out real fast, yes.
Yeah, it comes out real fast. In fact, the Smith & Wesson 642 is the gun that I think of when I think of a pocket revolver, because it just with the concealed hammer and the short grips on it, it conceals easily. It comes out of the pocket easily. It's great, you know, if you're carrying it in the winter in a jacket pocket, an outside jacket pocket, they're great for that. And again, their resistance to neglect also means good resistance to environmental variables like cold. So if you're carrying it in the outside pocket of a jacket, the cold doesn't bother it.
Yeah, at all. Not at all. So I wanted to bring you on to talk about a very specific revolver, one that you had design input on building this thing, and that's the Kimber K6, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, the Kimber K6, the K6S specifically, was a gun that came out. It was actually announced at last year's SHOT Show and is finally shipping in decent numbers. I've talked to a lot of people now who have actually gotten theirs from their local dealer.
Good.
And so they're shipping now, and it's a gun that they brought me in at the start of the project as a consultant to give them some input, and I was present with the development team as late as just about a month before it was actually introduced.
Good, good. So what are some of the unique features and differences of the Kimber K6 versus a lot of the other revolvers on the market?
Well, when we started the project, what they asked me was if you could build a revolver specifically for concealed carry in the 21st century, what would you build? And so I started sort of going down my list of what I would like in a concealed carry revolver, and pretty much all of what I would have liked went into the gun. And it's really not any one thing that stands out, but it's really the composition, the entire whole of the gun, all the stuff that went into it, because we have a six-shot cylinder, a very, very tiny six-shot cylinder, which was important because most of the small revolvers on the market are five shots. The Smith & Wesson 642 is a really good example. And so I wanted a six-shot revolver. A lot of us fondly remember the Colt Detective Special, that nice small six-shot gun. And so that was one of the criteria. I wanted it to have a concealed hammer so that there was nothing to snag on the draw. I wanted to have good sights, which were important in it. And they ended up with fairly good sights on the gun. I wanted – of course, it had to have a good trigger because that's the biggest determinant to being able to shoot a revolver well is having a decent trigger that you can control and manipulate well.
Yes, it
and,
is.
Yeah, and finally, I wanted it without any sharp edges. I wanted the edges beveled so that if you're handling the gun or putting it in and out of a holster, in and out of pocket, whatever, it wasn't going to tear clothing up or tear holsters up or tear your hands up. And so all of that kind of went together and into this small six-shot stainless steel concealed hammer revolver. And it turned out – I'm very happy with the way it turned out.
Yeah, and if people go to the Kimber website and check that out, it also – it looks fantastic. All the features you're talking about just seem to really make it a good option. My only concern when I look at – and again, I have to be fully honest right up front. I have not even had a chance to dry fire or get my hands on a K6. But the all-stainless 23-ounce weight, do you think that's going to be a little tough for some people to pocket carry?
Yeah, I don't think any steel revolver is going to be a good choice for pocket carry. And there are a lot of small stainless steel revolvers out there. Of course, the Ruger SP-101, which weighs more. One of my favorite guns, interestingly enough, is the Smith & Wesson 640, which is the stainless steel version of the 642. Now, it's not a gun that I would, frankly, ever want to pocket carry. But the nice thing about it is that as a belt holster gun, as a gun to go out and shoot, it's just a joy to shoot because of the extra weight. And the criteria, at least for the K6, was that they wanted to start in stainless steel, make a good gun that's nice and easy to shoot, that won't beat people up. And so that's the reason it came out in stainless steel. And it is. It's a joy to shoot. If it were made out of an alloy, it would not be quite as nice to shoot. It'd be nicer in a pocket, obviously, but it wouldn't be quite as nice to shoot. And for a lot, especially for a lot of new shooters, it would not be an ideal gun for a new shooter.
Yeah, this seems like this would be a great gun for a new shooter because, you know, it's fun to shoot. It looks like it's going to be just an easy gun to learn to shoot. Especially, it sounds like you're saying the trigger's good for that too, isn't it?
Yeah, one of the criteria I really wanted a really, really good trigger on the gun, and that was sort of non-negotiable. And they spent a lot of time and there was a lot of interaction with the development team to put a really good trigger on it, and we ended up with an absolutely beautiful trigger, non-stacking. It's very linear for a small gun, very smooth. As light as it can be and still be reliable, to have reliable ignition. Yeah. So that it makes it very shootable. In fact, one of the things that as I was talking to people who saw it at SHOT Show last year when it was introduced, everybody said, "Wow, that's great. It's a beautiful trigger." Yeah, that's the whole point. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly.
So Kimber on their website says something about the grip design. Is it unique compared to other revolvers in its class?
Well, there was a lot of attention paid to to making the grip frame in such a way that you could get a good high grasp on the gun, which is important to controlling recoil, and still to provide for a grip shape that didn't really I'm trying to figure a good way of putting this, that doesn't beat the shooter up. And what I mean by that is that if you have, you know, the grip frame channels recoil forces into the palm of your hand, and if it's not designed correctly, it can channel recoil forces into kind of concentrated spots, like hot spots. And the whole goal was to make sure that the recoil was distributed evenly. And so they did some things that actually turned out to work real well. For instance, if you look at the grip frame on the Kimber and the grip frame on, say, an equivalent Smith & Wesson, well, there really is no equivalent Smith & Wesson, but say on a J frame, the Smith & Wesson has a very, very narrow grip frame back there. And you'll notice the Kimber's is wider, and that distributes recoil force over a wider area. There were a lot of iterations that went on of various shapes and ideas, and they hit on that one. And the first time I pulled the trigger, yeah, this is great. This is what we want. So a lot of thought went into that design.
Yeah, and the really neat thing, as you know, as most people know, you can shoot 357s or 38s out of this. I bet you that thing is a dream to shoot with 38s.
Oh, with 38s, it's wonderful. And I was really surprised because shooting it with 357s, you know, out of it's a heavy gun. I mean, it's stainless steel, but it's still a small gun, and relative to, say, a big 4 or 6 inch gun. And shooting magnums out of a small gun is never pleasant.
No.
But out of this gun, it's not bad. And I've shot a lot of magnums out of a lot of different guns, and I was really surprised how well this controlled the pain of shooting 357s, and put 38s in it, and it's just a dream.
Yeah, I bet it is. I'm really looking forward to one of these days getting my hands on one. I might have to do what I typically do and just buy the stupid thing, and then I got one. Then I can shoot it all I want.
There you go.
And you said, so they're shipping now?
Yeah, from what I understand, they're shipping now. Okay. I know that, like I said, I've heard from several people who've gotten them now, and from their local dealers. And I know that of course, when they introduced it, there was a big buzz, and I'm sure they got tons and tons and tons of orders that they're trying to work their way through. Yeah. And but it is starting to show up, and there are, every once in a while I get a note from somebody that says, yeah, my local dealer actually has a couple in stock now, where before there were so much pent up demand and so many back orders, they were just sort of disappearing as they came in the doors. And now they're saying, oh, well, there are enough of them out there that we're starting to see them actually in stock in places.
That's good to hear. Grant, Kimber has never really been known as a revolver manufacturer. How did the K6 project come about, and why did Kimber decide to enter the revolver market?
You know, that's a good question. It's one I don't have a good answer for. And all I can tell you is that I'm sure that it was sort of a confluence of happy things, where you had some people who in the product development side who wanted to build a revolver. You had the engineering talent that came together. They were capable of doing it. And the marketing people probably said, yeah, you know, this is maybe a good time. And the finance people said, you know, we can probably make money if we do this. And then management said, okay. And I think that's kind of probably how it happened. What I can tell you is that the people that I got to meet at Kimber, there were a lot of really serious shooters there, guys and a few gals who really like to go out and shoot. And so I'm sure that there was a lot of ground up, you know, from the ground up support for it in the company. But I don't know if there was any one thing that caused them to do it. They didn't tell me.
But the good news of what I just heard you say is this is a gun that has been designed by serious shooters, including you.
Yeah, interestingly enough, when we start to talk about guns and particularly self-defense guns, because this was This is unabashedly a self-defense gun.
Yes.
And when we start to talk about that, it's very, very unusual for, first of all, for new designs to come to the market. Most of the guns that come to the market today that are successful are now, I mean, even the newest of them is a decade old. And it's very unusual, first of all, for a new gun design to come to market. But it's extremely unusual for a company, a gun company, to go out and say, okay, let's talk to some people who are experts in the defensive shooting world, and let's get their input from the start, and let's make a gun that, that really speaks to that use. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah,
you get a lot of people, you know, a lot of gun companies that will go out and they'll ask somebody famous, usually, to do a special edition maybe. And so they'll, okay, I want these sights and I want this finish and I want these grips. And okay, now we'll put that out as a special defensive edition. But they didn't really design the gun from the ground up. This is one of the very, very few times that I know of in the manufacturing world where they said, let's get that input from the start.
Yeah.
Let's build from the ground up something that, that meets this need. And I think that was – I think that's very cool. I think that's awesome that, that that happened.
Yeah, I think it is too. And like you said, it's rare. It's rare when they go to serious shooters and say, hey, here, what is it that you want?
Yeah, you know, and I think a lot of times – and after having been around the business for a while, you'd be surprised – how often the dealers and the distributors have far more input on the guns that are produced than people who are experts with them. It, you know, they usually go, okay, what's selling now? Put this in the gun. This sells. Okay, great. We'll make that. And that's usually how this sort of happens. So to have a company actually have the faith to say, let's start from the bottom and look at this and see what we should really do and then produce it. That's big. That's huge.
It's always irritating when either management or distributors or people who are non-gun people come up with something and say, okay, here, market, buy it.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have there was a case of, and I'm not going to name any names, but there was a case of a gun that I saw last year, and they asked my input on it. I said, okay, you really kind of need to do this and this and this. And then I see from SHOT Show coverage that they did exactly the opposite of what I suggest they
really?
Do. And okay. So they took a design that had a lot of promise in terms of a good concealed carry, good defensive shooting gun, a good home defense tool, a good personal defense tool, and just sort of ruined it. And it's just, you know, you just kind of slap your head. Okay, great.
Wow. You know, that's non-gun people making those decisions.
Exactly. And even if they're and you have in some cases people who are avid shooters but don't understand the defensive side of it because they're different. You know, the competition side, you know, and I'm, you know, sure the guys that were involved with this are certainly avid shooters, but they're, you know, they go out and they're target shooters and they don't understand the defensive part of it. So it's sad when it doesn't happen, but it's great when it does, when they actually do listen.
And for the benefit of my listeners, I want people to understand there's a difference, a distinct difference between a defensive shooting gun and a competition shooting gun.
Oh yeah, very. You know, in the defensive world, we have specific things that we want to do. We have to conceal it. It has to be portable. It has to be concealable. It has to be easy to shoot, efficient to shoot. It can't sort of tear your hands up manipulating it. You know, a whole bunch of stuff that we go down when we look at what's important to defensive shooting. That things that just aren't important in, say, a competition context or a target shooting or a plinking context.
And you're saying that that Kimber's got the defensive features in this K6.
Yeah, they listened and they put in virtually everything that I suggested to them that they do. And I was not certainly the only consultant on the project. I met some of the others, but I was the only guy from the defensive shooting side of things. And they listened and put together, I think, a good package.
And that brings up something I wanted to ask you. One of the things that has always irritated me about small snub-nose concealed carry revolvers is either terrible or non-existent sights.
Yeah, that was a topic of some discussion. And they went through several iterations in the sights to get something that was both low profile but also had a good, crisp, clear sight picture. And it worked. The sights are really quite nice on the gun for such a small gun. Of course, they're not as nice as they would be for a full size gun because there just isn't the room. But I think they did a very good job with the amount of room they had and the constraints within which they had to work. And the sights on that gun are really quite nice.
And they're real sights. You've got a real rear sight and a real front sight, don't you?
Exactly. And that was one of the things that was talked about early on, because one of the things that a lot of people like to do, of course, aside from the adjustability that you need, if you're going to regulate your gun to hit the point of aim with your chosen ammunition, you need a little bit of adjustability. But also, if someone wants to put night sights on the gun, or someone decides that instead of whatever front sight that they want, some other front sight, and having real sights on the gun, sights that you can adjust in a dovetail or take off and put others on, is kind of important. We accept that in the world of autoloaders. All autoloaders have sights that you can replace to some degree.
Right.
And it's a little odd in the revolver world to see that, especially in the small guns. Smith & Wesson, of course, has their Pro Series guns, which have those kinds of sights, but their regular line doesn't. And so that was one of the things that I early on I said, from the ground up, let's make it so it has good sights, and they did, and I'm very happy with the way the sights worked out for, like I said, for a small gun,
and changeable, so you can put night sights on them if you want.
Exactly. Or fiber optics or gold beads or whatever, what you want.
And are sight manufacturers keeping up with it? Are there sights out there available for it if somebody wants to change them right away?
I haven't really been paying a lot of attention. I do know that this year Kimber announced that they were going to have that you could order them with night sights, and I think there is a fiber optic option now. And so I suspect that somebody out there is making the sights.
Yeah, somebody's making those probably for Kimber and putting them on those guns that they're shipping out.
Yeah, I can't imagine that Kimber wants to deal with the Atomic Energy Commission license that you have to have to manufacture tritium stuff, and I'm sure they're having somebody do that.
That's amazing. An atomic. What did you say? An atomic what?
Yeah, tritium is a radioactive material, and so you have to have a license from either the Atomic Energy Commission or the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. I don't remember which, and it might be both. I don't know. Yeah. To handle that stuff. And so you have, which is why you don't have a whole lot of night sight makers. You've got a couple, and pretty much they make everything.
Yeah, interesting. So getting back to the revolver itself, would you say probably the single best feature on it is the trigger?
Yeah, I think so. I waver. I tend to think that I like the six-shot cylinder because I keep going back to – I like having a six-shot cylinder.
That's true. That's nice.
So that's a biggie. But, yeah, in terms of what most people are – when they pick the gun up and they play with it, the thing that they're going to notice, I think, and the thing that they're going to remark about is always going to be the trigger. And everybody who picks it up goes, oh, yeah, the sights are okay. Yeah, I like the six-shot cylinder. Yeah, the grip feels good. Oh, that trigger is great. And so that's kind of what everybody notices.
So why, other than the addition of one shot, why do you like that six shot cylinder better than the five shot models that are out there?
Well, in terms of percentages, of course, that extra shot, that's a big increase in capacity. We don't think of it that way, but between five and six, that's a big increase in capacity. And I like having that extra shot. We're starting to see, and again, we go back to this idea of looking at defensive shooting and what's necessary. And we're starting to see an increase in some areas of the country of multiple assailant crimes.
Yes, we are.
And having an extra shot between 5 and 6, and that's a 20% increase, if I'm doing the math right, having that extra shot, and particularly when you're dealing with maybe a couple of assailants, I think that's important.
I think it is too. Yeah. One of my big criticisms of the small revolvers is the 5-shot capacity. Man, I can carry something smaller than some 5-shot revolvers that have a 7-shot capacity.
Exactly.
Or even a 6-shot capacity. So that I'm glad that it's a 6-round gun.
Yeah, and I remember early on that when we started talking about when they first called me in, and it became clear pretty quickly that it was going to be a 6-shot gun, because I was certainly not the only person that suggested it really needed to be a 6-shot gun. And having 6 shots in a package that's really no bigger than 5 shots, and we're talking fractions of an inch, tenths of an inch is what we're talking difference in size between that and a 5-shot gun. When you can get 6 shots in the same package as a 5, why not?
Why not? Now, you mentioned earlier something about the size of the cylinder. It's smaller than most?
The cylinder is the smallest 6-shot Magnum cylinder, I believe, that's ever been made. And Kimber had an incredibly talented engineering staff that looked at how, using modern metallurgy and all that kind of stuff, how they could make a 6-shot Magnum cylinder. And it ends up being just a hair under even the size of the original Colt, I think it was Magnum Carry. So it's a little smaller than that yet. And it is, and they, of course, they torture tested it and a lot of stuff that I can't talk about, but it turns out to be an incredibly strong Magnum cylinder. It's no problem with handling Magnum loads, even in a small cylinder. So they did a phenomenal job engineering a very small cylinder.
Good. That's pretty sweet. You probably got me sold, Grant.
Well, I tell you pick one up, you'll want one. It's just like that.
It's going to follow me home in the box, right?
Yeah, probably.
They do that. And then they have a real habit of multiplying when you get them home.
Put them in the safe and maybe some soft music and just let nature take its course.
Well, Grant, thank you. This was fantastic. I want my listeners that might not be familiar with you to find out about you. I know you said you wrote a book. One of the most recent, I think, is Protect Yourself with Snub-Nosed Revolver, right?
Yeah, that one just came out actually last week. And so this is the Protect Yourself with Your Snub-Nosed Revolver, which is perfect for the Kimber K6, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
is a book that I wrote to take someone from the very beginning. I've got a snub-nosed revolver. I want to learn how to use it to defend myself. And takes from the beginning how to deal with the trigger, how to use sights, ammunition selection, all that kind of thing, right up through specific drills that they can use to develop their skills. So it's kind of a comprehensive all-in-one manual, and I believe it's the most comprehensive snub-nosed revolver book that's been written. So that's out, and like I said, it came out about a week ago.
And where can they find about you and about the book?
They can go to grantcunningham.com, all one word, grantcunningham.com, and there are links to the book, links to my blog, links to all my social media stuff. Of course, you can find me on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and all that stuff too.
All the wonderful social media out there.
Right.
And the book is – they can buy the book on your website. Can they also get it through Amazon?
Yeah, it's actually the links on the website go to Amazon, where you can get the Kindle and the paperback version.
Okay.
Or to the iBooks bookstore at Apple, where you can get it in a format for your iOS devices.
Yeah, once again, for my listeners, I will put a link in the show notes, but it's called Protect Yourself with Your Snub-Nosed Revolver, and a link to everything, a link to Grant's website, a link directly to purchase the book will be in the show notes. I'll give you the last word. What else do you want to say about the K6 or revolvers in general?
Well, go out, check out the K6 at your dealer and check out how it fits your hand. Check the trigger. The fit and finish on the guns are beautiful. And if you end up getting one, I'd love to hear about it. I'd love to hear what you think about it, because I'm kind of proud of the little thing.
Thank you, Grant. Thank you, as always, for your time. You know, I appreciate time's not a renewable asset, and I appreciate you giving me a good amount of it today.
Well, you know, Bob, it's always fun. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too.
Okay, many thanks, Grant Cunningham. Go to his website, grantcunningham.com. Follow the links in the show notes on how to get his book through Amazon, through my Amazon store, if you would, please. In fact, that leads me to my announcement. You can support my show. You notice I don't run a whole lot of commercials. All I do is talk about one sponsor, Concealment Solutions. By the way, Concealment Solutions could make you a pretty good holster for that Kimber K6 if you get one, or really just about any gun you get. Check them out, concealmentsolutions.com, concealmentsolutions.com. You get 10% off if you use the coupon code HandgunWorld. There, that's the only commercial that I'm running these days. So if you want to support me, if you get some benefit from the Handgun World podcast, did you know that you can support me without having to spend any extra money? You can financially support me. Just make your Amazon purchases on my Amazon store. All you got to do is go to handgunworld.com, go to my Amazon store, and find that link. Click that link every time that you make a purchase at Amazon. You can save the link. You can also download it as an app to your iPhone as well. So it looks like an app. It's not really an app, but it looks like an app. You can put it on your homepage. You can put that link on your homepage, and that's pretty cool too if you're using a mobile device to make Amazon purchases. But get Grant's book, How to Defend Yourself with a Revolver. Protect Yourself with Your Snub-Nosed Revolver is the actual title, by Grant Cunningham, and his website, grantcunningham.com. Hey folks, Ben and I are doing a lot of training this year, and we are also bringing our class to you. Ben Branham, the host of the Modern Self-Protection Podcast, also on the Self-Defense Radio Network. You should check it out. Go to my website, handgunworld.com. A list of all of our classes are there. They're Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced two-day classes, and you don't have to have a training prerequisite for those classes. As long as you can draw your gun safely from your holster, we're going to make sure that you can in the beginning of the class. Now, if you've never picked up a gun before, then our class is not for you. But if you have, and even if you've done some drawing from the holster and shooting, even if it's just a lot of dry firing, come to our class. Ben and I will get you up to speed. It's going to be 2 days. You're going to love it. And by the end of the class, you will probably be doing some things that you didn't think that you could do. Or if you could do them, we're going to teach you how to get to the next level. So check out all of our classes for 2017. And don't forget to listen to the shows on the Self-Defense Radio Network. Selfdefenseradio.net. Selfdefenseradio.net. You can see them all there. A lot of the podcasts I like to listen to are Gun Freedom Radio. I like to listen to the Armed Lutheran podcast, the Gun Blog Variety podcast, Liberty on Point, Passionate About Prepping, Self-Defense Gun Stories. There's a lot of good ones there at selfdefenseradio.net, Politics Daily. Fun stuff there. It's good stuff. The Polite Society podcast, of course. So please visit selfdefenseradio.net. You'll see a listing, and all of them you can subscribe to on iTunes. And last but not least, consider joining our Shooters Club video membership program. Videos do not replace training, but boy, they sure can reinforce it. And it's only $8 a month. So check it out. ShootersClubMembers.com, ShootersClubMembers.com, or you can go to HandgunWorld.com and click the Shooters Club page. Ben and I would be very much appreciative of your support. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Shoot straight, shoot safe. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.